WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Renee Montaigne here with you today while Terry Gross is away. My guest today is Sofia Coppola, who's directed her first feature film, The Virgin Suicides, which she adapted from the novel of the same name. Sofia Coppola is the daughter of Francis Ford. She spent half of her childhood on location, starting with the legendarily long film shoot in the Philippines of Apocalypse Now. Her father also pressed into service young Sofia to play on screen the child of a mafioso in the Godfather movies. Her mother, Eleanor, makes documentary films. When Sofia Coppola decided to make her own movie, she turned to a quite different landscape filled with five golden girls gliding through the suburbs of Detroit in the 1970s and the boys who were obsessed with them.
Everyone dates the demise of our neighborhood from the suicides of the Lisbon girls. People saw their clairvoyance in the wiped out elms, the harsh sunlight, and the continuing decline of our auto industry. Even then, as teenagers, we tried to put the pieces together. We still can't. Now, whenever we run into each other at business lunches or cocktail parties, we find ourselves in the corner going over the evidence one more time. All to understand those five girls. But after all these years, we can't get out of our minds. Cecilia, the youngest, was 13. And Lux was 14. Bonnie was 15. Mary was 16. And Therese was 17. No one could understand how Mrs. Lisbon and Mr. Lisbon, our math teacher, had produced such beautiful creatures.
That's the opening of The Virgin Suicides. Director Sofia Coppola says the entire film is based on the boys gazing at the girls.
Yeah, the book that I base it on by Jeffrey Eugenides is written from the boys' point of view. And the narrator in the film is Giovanni Ribisi, who's the adult version of the boys looking back on this time. And, you know, a lot about memory, about those kind of long summer days when you're young, and about this, yeah, first kind of love obsession.
And
a lot of lamenting.
Lamenting what was lost, time gone by?
Time gone by, and these girls are always just out of their reach. And I think the story, it has very tragic moments, but it also has a lot of humor that really struck me from the book. That is pretty funny, just the confusion between the boys and the girls and the awkwardness and that.
Yeah. You know, of course, I mean, the title tells the story in one sense, The Virgin Suicides. There's a great line at the very beginning of the book and the very beginning of your film, which you lifted directly from the book as dialogue. It's the youngest girl, Cecilia, who's 13, mm-hmm. who's just attempted unsuccessfully to kill herself. And you say it, you know the line I'm talking about.
Yeah, she ends up in the hospital after attempting suicide, and the doctor says to her, you know, what are you doing here, honey? You're too young to know how hard life is, or, you know, you don't know how hard it is. And she looks at him and says, obviously, doctor, you've never been a 13-year-old girl. Which, when I read that line in the book, you know, I knew I was going to like this book. And it just starts it off. I mean, it's really in the kid's world. And I remember that feeling of being that age and having, you know, the school principal or, you know, whoever talking down to you, and you knew that you knew more than they did. And, you know, just that kind of frustration of being stuck and, you know, you can't make decisions for yourself, but you feel more aware than any of them.
When you took the book, and by then it was, it's being called a sort of a cult favorite. Is it? I mean, was it something that was passed around?
Yeah, I think it had a cult following where it wasn't so known in, you know, mainstream culture, but that there are people that have read it and, you know, have reread it and feel really kind of protective of it. Or, you know, how you have something that you feel strongly that somebody, you know, sees the world in a way that you do. And people were talking about it and, you know, friends. I remember kind of in New York where the writer was based. And so a friend's told me about it. And then I was in the bookstore and I saw the cover. It's just a close-up of blonde hair and the title, Virgin Suicides. And I was intrigued. And I'd heard it was a good book. And then I just loved reading it because it was very funny and sad and sweet and all the things that I like. And also it was intriguing because this title, you know what's going to happen, but still it's like this mystery that you're trying to piece together all the evidence to understand what's happened.
Right, that's what the boys seem to have made a lifelong work out of, which is piecing together not so much what happened, but why.
Yeah, I think there's those, you know, I don't know, for me, I think everyone has moments in life that you don't understand and you try to go over and over to try to find some understanding of it. And I like that he talked about that there aren't good reasons for some things that happened. And you know, at a certain point, you just look at the parts that have made an impression on you.
For you, it's quite well known that your brother died when he was young and you were very young. He was 22 when you were 14?
I was 15.
Sort of in the middle of the age of these girls. Now, your brother didn't commit suicide. He was killed.
No.
But it was sudden, unexpected.
Yeah. It was, it definitely made a huge impression on me, and I'm sure there's part of that, you know, reflected in this film, because, you know, the story is about, you know, an element of it is about loss and about surviving a tragedy. So that's definitely something that I've experienced personally, and I, you know, could relate on that level. But in the story, it's, I think the idea of suicide is just so inexplicable. You know, it's just so hard. I haven't experienced that personally, but I, you know, I can imagine how, you know, how shocking that must be, and that there really is no good reason for something like that.
Although suicide is very seductive, it sort of works that way in the book, actually. There's something so pure about, especially at that age and at that level of beauty, you know, of disappearing like that. I mean, what struck me about the movie and what I sense about the book is that they died and it was awful, but there was some other layer there.
Yeah, to me it was always a very, I mean, the story is really about, from the boys' point of view, and the girls are really symbols. Their death is the end of the boys' childhood and innocence, and to me they're not so much real girls, but they, you know, kind of bookend the end of that part of their life that's gone forever, that, you know, sunny adolescence, and then they go into the adult world. So it's a, you know, it's a passage of that time. And so it was important for me to make sure that the girls weren't, you know, that their symbols are not real girls. You don't get to know them very well. You're always watching them from a distance. And I think it would have just been a whole different story if you really got to know them. And then you'd have to really start to go more into the psychology of suicide, which is something I didn't want to explore in this.
Sofia Coppola is my guest. Her new film is The Virgin Suicides. We'll talk more after a short break. This is Fresh Air. I'm Renee Montaigne, back with Sofia Coppola, who's directed the new movie, The Virgin Suicides. She says her earliest memories are from when her father, director Francis Ford Coppola, was making Apocalypse Now. How old were you when your father took you to, with your mother and your two brothers, to the Philippines when he was filming Apocalypse Now, which obviously is his most famous movie in one sense, and that's that it took 2 years to film?
Yeah, I was 4 and 5 during that. And, you know, I remember being there and, you know, you take me in the helicopters and through the jungles, and I had a great time. Everyone else was probably having a hard time, but I had fun.
Yeah.
But I definitely had a lot of different, you know, experiences, because we would always go on location with my dad. So, you know, we lived there, and I went to junior high in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and in New York. And
Tulsa, Oklahoma, because...
He was shooting The Outsiders and Rumblefish. That's one of my favorite movies, Rumblefish.
Did that make you... Now, see, you could have then been the object of desire In other words, you could have been on either side of this story. You could have been the girl out of reach, her world too glamorous, you know. Or you could have had your... Was it both ways for you, or did you ever feel like that?
I wasn't the object of desire. I was pretty awkward. I definitely wasn't anything like the Lisbon girls. But, I mean, I think I could... You know, there was that thing of being the new kid sometimes, so that you're, you know, a little bit of an outsider. And so, I mean, I can relate to that a little bit. But I think, I mean, I really liked the story in that it's in suburbia because it was sort of so normal, the idea of, you know, living next door to someone that you knew all your life because we moved a lot. So that, to me, was appealing.
So the suburbia that's shown here, to you, it's the other.
Yeah, because it's not that familiar to me. I mean, I did live a lot in St. Helena up in Napa Valley where it was our home base. So I know what it's like to live in a small community where you know people all your life.
Yeah, although I'm from Northern California. St. Helena is not, it's beautiful and it's lush and it's not a suburbia in that classic 70s sense.
No, so that, I think it was, you know, appealing to me to shoot the story in suburbia because, you know, you look at it differently if you haven't grown up in it.
What movies did you, when you were that age, what movies affected you?
When I was a teenager? I think Purple Rain made a big impression on me. And 16 Candles, John Hughes. But then, I mean, we were exposed to a lot of other kinds of film just from my dad and, you know, old Frank Capra movies. And what are my favorite movies are, I don't remember when seeing them, but Darling by John Schlesinger and Lolita, Stanley Kubrick's great classic. And that to me, you know, Lolita definitely made an impression on me on how I think the character of Lux that Kirsten Dunst plays is in the vein of that character.
Describe that just a little. I mean, a lot of people know the movie, but what? Because in a way, Lolita was a virgin, but she was also a fallen angel type?
In the book, you know, she's described as a honey-hued, you know, object of desire, and she's toying with him. So, I mean, that story is about obsession. And also, it's, you know, this tragic story, but it's really funny, the book and the movie. So I always like that combination.
What directors, I mean, your father obviously is one of the most famous directors in America. When you were growing up, mm-hmm. and you're not that old now, you must have been put in contact with a number of some really great directors. Or am I wrong?
No, it's true because, you know, there was a real community of those directors. My dad has friends that are the directors, and I, you know, remember Kurosawa coming to our house when I was little, but I was a little kid, so I can't say I learned anything from that. But I think just being around that atmosphere was very, you know, stimulating. We visited other people's film sets, but I mean, my dad was my biggest impression in wanting to become a filmmaker, just because, you know, he was the person I learned the most from.
What do you think you got most from your father? And also, what didn't you get? I mean, what do you discover you're not at all like him?
It's hard to say how I'm different. I think my movie's definitely in, you know, my own point of view and style. But, I mean, he... You know, that's my impression of filmmakers growing up around his sets. So I definitely, you know, I wasn't paying attention consciously the whole time, but just being around that when I went on my own set, it was familiar to me, and I approached things in the way I'd seen him work. And I guess mostly he always emphasized the story and the acting. So, you know, the priority on the set for me was the acting, even though I'm, you know, really interested in the visuals and the photography and working with the, you know, art department and all these other elements. But, you know, I rehearsed with the actors and in the way that I had, you know, seen him work. And it's hard to say, but I definitely, I mean, that was my film school, was being around his sets. And he likes to to be a teacher and talk about what he's learning about film, because he's still very, you know, he's really enthusiastic about it.
Your husband, Spike Jonze, he was making, being John Malkovich at the same time you were making Virgin Suicides. Was that hard? I mean, and I don't mean hard being separated. I mean, was it hard working towards the movie, being in the movie, and then coming out of the movie when two people are doing very creative things that are putting them under very much pressure?
It was a strange situation that we were that we were kind of going through the same thing at the same time. We were both trying to get our cast and financing at the same moment, and we were both shooting at the same moment. And but in a way, it's comforting to have that in common, and you know what the other person's going through. And it was exciting to both. You know, I was there when he was trying to get it made, and then to go off separately and shoot your movies, and then come back and, you know, compare stories. But I think the best thing was just, you know, being able to, that person you're with understands what you're going through. And also, you know, if he was, you know, a stockbroker or something, and I had to be enthusiastic listening to him talk about his work, it would be, I think, more difficult than something that, you know, I'm really interested in and know about. Mm.
In a sense, you're making this movie and getting great reviews generally on this movie. It must be a vindication in a way, in terms of your so far your work in Hollywood. I mean, one thing that must keep coming up over and over again is the sort of fiasco or perceived fiasco of your being cast young and inexperienced in Godfather 3 as the Corleone daughter. I mean, you didn't get good reviews for that, and had to face that. What did you learn from that? I mean, from a kind of a traumatic experience, I imagine, but what did you learn?
I think it toughens you up, you know, and but I don't know, it's vulnerable putting yourself out there, but it wasn't devastating because I wasn't studying and planning to be an actress. It was just something I did. But, you know, then there was some news magazine that said that, did she ruin her father's movie, and you're 18 and, you know, insecure. That's not the easiest thing. But, you know, I just went back to art school, which is what I was pursuing in the first place, and for me, it was a long time ago, so I'm not going to say it was, like, the easiest thing, but I don't, you know, I don't take it personally. That's, you know, their job is to write things that are controversial, so.
So the movie's out, and your parents, both of them are filmmakers. What did they, what was their reaction? Proud, I'm guessing, but.
Yes, they're the proud parents. I think, you know, parents always like when you go into family business or, you know, they pass something on, it's exciting. And our whole family's in the film business, so. You know, it's exciting to be a part of that.
Sofia Coppola, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Sofia Coppola's new movie is The Virgin Suicides. Coming up, The Voice of the Poet. This is Fresh Air.